You're listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, where you get valuable information you just can't find anywhere else. To thrive in today's trying times, you need the Financial Survival Network, now more than ever. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and get your free newsletter and gift. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.
Welcome. You are listening to watching the Financial Survival Network. Well, market's still down. I mean, it's Tuesday after the big Bloody Monday or Black Monday, depending upon your predilection. And it leaves you with a lot of questions. What is the Fed going to do? Are they going to do what they say, or will they be forced to back off? You know my opinion. The Fed will, nobody wants to know, be known in history for tanking the global economy. And that goes for Jerome Powell as well. So they're going to push it right up to the edge, is my guess. But David Strzuzewski is with us now. David, great to have you on. Hey, you watch this. You got your views on crypto that I want people to hear about. But going forward, the Fed, the stock market, interest rates, the dollar, all these things, what is your take on the situation?
Lions and tigers and bears, oh my. I'd say we have so many headline-driven forecasts right now taking place all at once. It's a little bit challenging for the average person to just even stay on top of these ideas, let alone really tackle what do they mean to them individually. So here's my summarization of what's going on right now. I think that everything is fairly priced as long as the Fed does not raise rates. Okay, so the Fed is needing to raise rates. We know that they've basically been wrong on everything that they've said. Hey, inflation's transitory. Hey, we're going to get this splashless landing. Then they're like, hey, we're just going to try to work this thing out. And holy smokes, now we just found out here on June the 9th that we have inflation at 40-year record highs. What an incredible moment that we find ourselves as, we've now just seen that inflation forecasts were underestimating what we actually found. So this means that the Fed has to raise rates even more. So what's taking place right now? Tomorrow, the Fed's going to come out. They're going to, for sure do 50 basis points. I think consensus is on that. I think that there's a lot more consensus just because we saw this number that we're going to see like a 75% or 75 basis point hit right off the bat. I personally think that makes most sense. And by the way, if they were planning on raising 1% between this month and next, I think that it would be, okay that if they do 75 now, if they really had to, they could only do a quarter point following. But what will likely happen is we see 75 or 50 basis points today. They're looking at doing that again and again and again. And we see ourselves in a very, very, very difficult hour. I think Jamie Dimon a couple of weeks ago said it pretty well, that there's a hurricane that's coming right now. And it's important that we have an understanding of what that means to us, our portfolios, our plans here for the future. What we knew to be true is, I think, ultimately changing right in front of us today as we speak.
All right. So you're convinced they're going to follow through and they're going to keep doing it regardless of what happens to the economy, both in the U.S. and abroad?
No, I agree with you. I think Jerome Powell is really hawkish when it comes down to it. Part of the reason why he is not really taking a strong stance on the maybe more of the political side of the conversation, because, economics and politics are separate sciences, yet they do cross mingle here. And so we've got a lot of policy that has ultimately driven the inflation that we have today. If you look at when President Biden had went into office and what took place with inflation, we had 2 years steady leading into that time frame for over a decade. And then, boom, everything goes off the charts. And of course, that's in large part due to his, war against fossil fuels, specifically canceling the Keystone Pipeline, the very first action in office, and then, of course, canceling new fracking and exploration projects there. And so, we want everyone else's oil, but somehow the fact that we do it safer and cleaner than everybody else, and we have more than everybody else, we want to be an importer of oil for some reason, as opposed to an exporter, which he inherited as an economy when we first started. You want to end inflation? You start with oil, and that gets us a real big move in the right direction.
Yeah, well, honestly, with $100 plus per barrel oil, a recession's baked into the cake, isn't it?
Well, yeah, but just to my point here before, and the question is, then what can we do? You know, because that's what I really care about. Like, what's that way forward? And then, you know, and that tells us maybe how fast some of this could heal. You know, so wouldn't it be amazing if the United States was making that money at this high price per barrel? But yet we're just forfeiting it today, and we're giving it to other, you know, nations who may not exactly be our best friends or have our interests at heart. But yeah, so we're seeing this inflation come up. It's going to be into the peak, you know, months here as the summer comes. We've got more agriculture. We got people that are going to probably be, you know, taking more road trips. And of course, you know, flying is going to happen as well, although the prices went up significantly. So we'll see if people stay home. I think we're just seeing a lot of different things converging right now. And again, it all points back to the Fed and what they're going to do in response to what the Biden administration has ultimately done with policy and where we find ourselves today in an economic cycle, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. Exactly. So then the question is, what do you do to protect yourself? Do you just bail out of the stock market totally? Cryptos, real estate, sounds like everything is going to be hit here. Maybe gold and silver will do well after the initial liquidation that's taking place now. But when you see the price of everything going down at once, that tells you there's a liquidation event taking place.
Right. Well, we've got a number of factors that are going on. And so you are correct. That supply and demand or liquidation are very important for us to understand. When the sellers want to sell more than the buyers want to buy, then things go on sale. When the buyers want to buy more than the sellers want to sell, then everything goes up. And so let's note a couple of things here. One is that, and this is one I'm tracking, I'm very concerned about. I don't think that we've actually seen the data really come across the headlines yet. And that is this. Our economy is very strongly based upon the housing market. In fact, housing is a lagging, not a leading indicator, but a lagging indicator of our economy's direction. And so we're getting new numbers right now, but a lot of our numbers are 90 days in the rear view. And why is that? Because a lot of people got their mortgage and then they got locked in and then they went and finally found the house and then they, you know, figure this out. Well, our economy was set up with a 3% interest rate on a 30-year mortgage. Well, today, as we sit right now, they're at 6%. And oh, by the way, when the Fed hikes rates tomorrow and then next month and so on and so forth, we're going to see continuations in the 30-year mortgage. Now, what this has is an adverse consequence to price. And we see compression of price. This is deflationary for real estate in this regard. When you're buying real estate, you're actually purchasing a payment because one third of your income can be afforded as a real estate mortgage payment. So here's what ends up occurring. If we have interest rates that go up 3 additional percent, each 1% that rises is a 30% loss to our buying power. So our same, if you're the median income in America, $6,300, you can afford $2,100 of a payment monthly. And previously, a 3% mortgage allowed a $500,000 home with your $2,100 payment. Today, at 3% difference, it's only a $350,000 home that you can afford. Therefore, across the nation, we should have had a deflationary event taking place in real estate immediately. And by the way, this rate is not stuck. It's going to continue to go up until the Federal Reserve looks at things like probably moving us to a 35 or a 40 or even a 50-year mortgage eventually, as I think that that's ultimately where they're going to head, given the fact that they're going to try to hold on to price. And that's where supply builds up. And that's what I think that we're going to see heading into the summer, which is historically the hottest market to be selling. I think that there's a lot of demand, so you may see some, but you're going to see a lot of people getting priced out right now. And this real estate market is very concerning to me because that means we're not selling as many products for GE. Painters aren't painting as much. Carpenters aren't doing their thing. And much of our economy is not touching as many points in that housing market.
Okay, so you think even in the hotter markets, is this going to happen?
No.
Okay.
I think that the hotter markets are seeing the benefit of the, so we've had the great exodus occur from the workplace here in 2022. That's what we refer to it as. And then since 2020, we're ultimately seeing the great migration, which is many people moving away from high income tax states like New York, New Jersey, Illinois, California, going to places like Texas and Florida, the Carolinas, et cetera. And so a lot of those places are seeing, you know, money that's coming from larger economies where the value of their homes have been so elevated. So they're coming into a lower priced market where they can get, you know, amazing homes for $300,000, $350,000. And so for them, they're saying, hey, an amazing home, $350,000, not a big deal. I just sold my place for $1.7 million, you know? So that's kind of the thinking, I think. So I don't think you're going to see them cooling down in a lot of the areas that we're seeing people move into. Although I'm concerned in a lot of places that they're moving from, even here in the greater Seattle area where I find myself, you know, we're insulated with all these tech companies and, you know, Costco and Boeing as well as Amazon and Google that are here. And so, you know, our housing appreciation has been insane. Like, I don't even believe what they tell me on Zillow that my house went up last year, like 34%. So, you know, here's reality. What goes up also comes down.
Yeah. And when you see things go parabolic, inevitably the price will return to fill that gap, as we say in the stock market, right?
That's right. That's right. I think that people should just ask the question, you know, so with that information, what do we do now? How does that guide, you know, a lot of our thinking? Many people are planning on downsizing their home, and they may consider that selling sooner than later would be better. Why? Because there is low supply today and there's a high demand. There's a lot of buyers, though, that were pre-qualified at 3 or 4% that today, when they go to actually make that approval, it could be difficult to get that thing all the way done. So I don't know. We're going to see what happens. That high demand, though, I'd say if people are looking at transitioning, this is one of the last moments before we really see some of the change. But here's another point, just to throw this in the last part on real estate, and that is when foreign dollars are no longer purchasing treasuries based upon our treasury yield, and they like real estate in general, is this a better time or a worse time for them to be coming in and buying the United States market? As an interest rate rising environment means a deflationary component to the pricing. That means the world is on sale to the or the United States is on sale to the rest of the world. And we have to be aware of that.
So we could see a flood of foreign buying here, because especially situation in Europe, the way it is, a lot of the US dollar going up, not just a result of higher rates, but it's a result of flight to so-called safety, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So we were talking briefly pre-call about cryptos. You've got a view there. I've got my view. I see Bitcoin poised to go much, much lower, you know, perhaps into four figures from five figures. I called it when it hit the peak at 67,000. Like I called it 4 years ago in December when it hit 19,500, I wish I had called the increase that was going to take place after that, but I was waiting for 3,000 Bitcoin. Never happened. This time, hopefully, I'll be a little smarter. What's your take on cryptos? And this makes you a very non-traditional financial planner here, David.
Right. And by the way, I'm not giving financial advice today.
All right. Take that hat off. Take your financial planner hat off.
Don't just survive. Thrive. The Financial Survival Network.
Torque Resources is an exploration company establishing a portfolio of premier copper gold early stage projects in Chile. Torque's management and technical teams have a strong track record of raising capital, discovery, and monetization of exploration successes. The company's Margarita Copper Gold project is located within the prolific coastal Cordillera Belt in Chile, which hosts some of the world's largest and most profitable copper mines. The Margarita project possesses excellent discovery potential for a major copper discovery due to the strength of the alteration system, large-scale magnetic targets, and the presence of copper oxide mineralization. Drilling is anticipated to begin in Q3 of this year. Torque trades in Canada under TORQ and on the OTC under TRBMF. To learn more, go to torqueresources.com. That's torqueresources.com.
This is the Financial Survival Network, the information you need to thrive now more than ever.
Yeah. So the best advice I heard about crypto was this: don't put anything in that you're not willing to lose. And we're seeing that, you know, story play out and how true it is right now. However, a lot of people, you know, just like in everything, including tech stocks in the .com timeframe, or even recently, you know, we can go so heavy in one area that we believe is so solid. So so don't put anything more in than you can lose. But second is, don't put nothing in at all. Why? Because if you took the equivalent of a nice weekend away with your spouse, and you put that into the markets right now, especially as they're on super sale. And let's just say that you checked in with that 4 or 5 years from now, either you lost a weekend with your spouse, or you may have had some substantial gains right there. And so that's an interesting thought. With regard to Bitcoin, so it is true that there's only 21 million of these coins and that there is a real demand out there. And so how they figure that out, as I understand it, and I'm not an expert here, but I've done some research, they identify one Bitcoin as a place within the theory or the algorithm of pi where there's 5 zeros. There's 21 million places within the math that we understand that this occurs. They will mine them all the way out. The point that we need to understand, though, is that with Bitcoin is that it also comes down to supply and demand. And in May of 2020, we went through a period which is called halving. This is where I first began to pay more attention to this, because Bitcoin, I think when I was looking at it, it was like 5,600 a coin. And I was like, well, if this halves, and that means that those who do the equations that make the transactions work for the coins, they're rewarded in a Bitcoin. Each time that this halving occurs, which is every 4 years, the amount of coins that are distributed for those that solve the problem is halved. It goes in half. So there's some that I've talked to today who are literally billionaires in Bitcoin, or they were when I spoke with them last. And they're saying that the Bitcoin mining business is becoming difficult to even break even with on a day-to-day basis. So where this was this massive bastion and haven for them before, it's becoming more difficult. So the price is going to have to go up in order for them to continue to be able to do this. Otherwise, they lose money every time that they make a coin. I promise you, they're going to finish the coins, though. The point is that the next halving occurs in the year 2024. If that happens just by the supply-demand factor, be paying attention to that moment. We're always going to see price fluctuation, though. And so crypto is a speculative market. Bitcoin was above $1 trillion itself. The entire crypto market, just as of yesterday, dropped below $1 trillion in totality. So that's an interesting thing to understand. So it's crashed significantly, 50, 60% down from its high, 70% in some cases with certain coins. And I think that what we're seeing is a real revolution come to that market space and that place. I think 2020 was the real catalyst for adoption across the board. I didn't think that crypto was going to be even an idea talked about as being adopted for the next 10, 15 years, or that it's possible that we could lose the world reserve currency as the US dollar. 10, 15 years, maybe, possibly, but not something soon. Now we find ourselves in places where there's a lot of pressure, and there's a lot of people looking for different answers, especially in Russia, where, you know, we shut down the whole system and crashed the ruble. Well, there's good people that are there that are saying, holy smokes, we're not Vladimir Putin. We didn't agree with this. How do we transact? And so we have some challenges with the fact that our, you know, normal fiat money system is now electronic, but we're talking about electronic money that's now electronic. And so there's these bridging of these two paths. I don't think that most of the coins personally, though, are going to actually be a dollar for dollar currency. That's not looking at them correctly. Look at them as purchasing a technology. Look at them as purchasing an algorithm. If you look at your cell phone bill, you see all these different line item places where you're getting taxed from all these different places. Well, here's the little secret. There's a ton of companies that help to make the technology that connects your phone to those satellites and does the video and does the audio so beautifully. And there's a lot of organizations that got paid off along the way in order to make that thing work. And so I think of crypto as the foundation for what is the future is going to be architected in, because we want decentralized. That's better. We want, you know, a safer system where someone's not going to hack us or steal our identities or whatever. We should have faster contracts. And that's really where the world's going, is smart contracts. Imagine doing a mortgage, but not having to come up with the same tax return, right? It was already logged. It's you did it. It's a known thing. Why do you need to, you know, render that? And an underwriter looks at it. The data points are the data points. Those can be put into the electronic system, and then they can go over and translate in a way that works out really well. So watch for the technology in these areas. But I would say be very wary, as many coins that have done well or have perceived value may not have as much perceived value as I think you're gonna start to see the world look at the crypto in more of the function, and not necessarily just the fact that it has .com at the end of its name, if I can just parallel the analogy again.
Sure. Gotcha. All right. Interesting. What about precious metals, David?
Okay, so I'm a fan of precious metals as well. The big challenge, of course, is that our society is not set up to transact in precious metals. So obviously with the lean, when people say, oh, you're a precious metals guy, then, okay, so I own all the gold, silver, platinum, palladium, copper, nickel, whatever in the world. And the answer is, I think have some. And so an allocation of some is important. I'll just say this much in our own case here, our metals portfolio does invest in metals, but we also invest in the miners, which tend to actually produce a widget where if you have a silver ounce of gold, I mean, I've got a 5 ounce one sitting on my desk right here. You know, it's been sitting there for years. It's still holding the similar value as it did 5 years ago. And I think that it's an important thing to understand specifically as currencies are adjusting or at least threaten to adjust. But I like owning the ETF SLV GLD. If I'm looking for some swing trade sometime. But oil is also an area that we are actually bullish and we believe is going to, you know, continue to grow. In fact, I think that there's even some possibility that, you know, America could change its direction because we're forced to, and we could, you know, begin exploration here again and begin, you know, turning on the spigot because we do it safer and cleaner than anyone in the world. And we have more of it than anyone else. Why wouldn't we start here? That would obviously be really good in a wonderful investment opportunity as well.
Yeah, it's going to happen. You know, they've tried to stack everything, investment, funds, financial institutions against energy. But when the lights go out and when you can't heat your house because you can't afford to, you know, I just did a report that electricity rates are going to double in the next 18 months for no reason, but they're going to because of bad policy. And how does that help the green future to have electric rates skyrocket? I don't quite understand.
It doesn't help it at all, nor does the fact that we have a semiconductor shortage, nor does it help the fact that, you know, California has one of the largest lithium deposits in the entire world, but it's too dirty for the state of California to mine. And so we choose to do that in other nations for our clean energy. And so the point is that, you know, a lot of the oil of the future, which would be chips and all that, we're not even the leaders in right now. That's all China technology. And so we find ourselves way behind the eight ball. But, you know, how are we going to fuel all these, you know, electric cars that everyone wants, which, hey, is wonderful. Let's do it. Let's do a cleaner future. I'm for that. I think everyone's for that. It's just, how do we get there? What's the progression? What's the timing of that? Are we building clean nuclear plants? Because holy smokes, that's the answer. Or clean coal. That really should be the answer, given our resources of what we have. But no one's even talking about solution. The answer is just no fossils. But the problem is the no fossil response produces inflationary environments. By the way, Putin can't even wage this war if oil gets back down to the valuation that we believe that it should be at, which is well under $100 a barrel. But the point is that we're not going to see that if we find ourselves continuing to be, you know, saying, hey, you know, give me more, give me more, give me more.
All right. I think we covered a lot here. David, just tell us how we find you, where we find you, how we connect with you on the web.
Yeah, great question. So MySPG is the website, MySPG.com. Sound Planning Group is my company. I actually have education courses that I teach here in the greater Seattle area. We're actually bringing them online here in webinar form, doing some cool things with that. Just endeavoring to share ideas about, you know, how to even make decisions about your Medicare long-term care conversations. What an important thought as everyone's going forward and they're thinking about, you know, health. We're talking about Social Security and taxes, talking about investing in the 21st century and how it's different than any other time in history, how to ride bulls and tame bears.
Yeah, well, how to ride bulls and tame bears, that's what it's all about. Near and dear to my heart, I just I'm becoming in a couple of weeks a senior citizen. That means I will get Medicare, so it opens up a world full of discounts to me, even though I don't
feel
like a senior citizen. But hey, it's a whole rat maze out there of alternatives for Medicare, Medicare coverage, all these things. It's not really going to save me any money, but I think my coverage will improve based upon my selection of a Medicare supplement policy. And we really appreciate you coming on. If you got a question for David, yes?
I just want to add one thing, Carrie, because you just said something so important. people need to understand that Medicare has this IRMA component to it, or it's based on your modified adjusted gross income from 2 years ago. You'll pay a Part B or Part D surcharge based upon your income or Roth conversions that you're doing. So it's important to understand that, as well as the taxation on Social Security, because those two things are not typically accounted into people's planning process. So as the world continues to turn, a lot of people like yourself, Carrie, you probably do a lot better than I know you do a lot better than most out there. The point is that you know, a lot of people today need to be looking at their numbers and understanding what their options are. And, you know, the difference between a supplement and an advantage are very confusing. They need to be able to turn to someplace for that type of information. So that's part of the reason why I'm out there doing it and educating.
It's so important. Yeah, I have friends who are agents that I'm basically educating, because they're just getting into the Medicare, you know, recent retirees to Florida, they're getting into the Medicare arena, the policy, yeah, supplements, and really, really important, because the decisions you make when you enter Medicare are going to be with you potentially for the rest of your life. So look, if you've got a question for David, just shoot me an email, kl@carrielutz.com. We'll get you an answer. Don't forget, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. The link to the show notes in this interview will take you right to David's site. And sign up for your free newsletter. Just shot one out today specifically about the fact that electricity prices are going to double in the next 18 months. It's baked in the cake. David, so much baked in the cake, but thank you for helping clear up some of it. And we will definitely have you on again soon.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Carrie.
Thanks for listening to Carrie Lutz's Financial Survival Network, your solution to today's trying times. For the latest, go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Financial Survival Network, now more than ever.